To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
KVOO Portland. I want to remind you that this is a great time to become a member of KBOO. Show your support for Prison Pipeline and for KBOO by becoming a member of KBOO today. Just go to kboo.fm/give. Help us meet our $15,000 goal. We're community funded and we need your support to get there. So just go to kboo.fm/give. Or text KBOO to 44-321. Thanks, and now on for today's show.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
Welcome to Prison Pipeline, produced at the studios of KBOO Portland. I'm Karen James. I'm here with Prison Pipeline host Emma Lugo. Hi, Emma.
Hi, welcome.
And we have a very special guest today, Representative Tana Sanchez. She is a Democrat from District 43, and she represents North and Northeast Portland here in Oregon. Welcome, Representative Sanchez.
Thank you. Good to be here.
And the Oregon legislative session just wrapped up. It was a short session here in Oregon, about 35 days, and a lot of bills did get passed. Some very important criminal legal bills, some police reform. So we are going to discuss which bills passed, which bills failed, and which bills hopefully will come back next year. Emma?
Representative Sanchez, I'd like to start with House Bill 4050. You gave public testimony, and so did Zach from the OJRC. This is a bill to help out women who are incarcerated at Coffee Creek. It helps to fund three attorneys through the next fiscal year. Can you talk a little bit about that bill and your support of it?
Yes, of course. So, as you may recall, the original bill that we passed in the 2019 session was House Bill 2631. And that bill, of course, did the original establishment of the pilot program in Coffee Creek to work with women inside there to deal with civil legal issues. And that bill was actually, that sort of pilot program was originally designed as a part of Red Lodge Transition Services work, a really tiny pilot that they did that really looked at civil legal issues and struggles that women had coming out of prison, and that often led to them recidivating, because it's overwhelming to come out of prison and have so many things that you end up dealing with that really are just not a part of your everyday life, and they become struggles and just become, again, more overwhelming than the whole idea of getting a job and establishing your life and doing all of those things. So this bill brought forth that opportunity to deal with those civil legal issues. This follow-up bill, 4050, was simply to extend the sunset on the program and allow us to continue to develop more data so that we can actually, hopefully, in the long run, bring that back as a permanent program within the Department of Corrections so that everyone can have access to those types of civil legal services.
And so the bill extends funding for 1 year. What is the goal after that? What are some of your thoughts about how to extend this program more permanently to help benefit the women at Coffee Creek?
Well, actually, it extends out to December 31 of 2024. So it gives us some time in the 23 session to bring forth data that would tell us what folks who are then exiting the prison systems have done with their lives, hopefully, whether or not they've been able to stabilize and not recidivate and be able to get back to their lives in some way, shape, or form. Our hope, again, is to be able to provide some really consistent and positive data that say that the programs work, that it's really important that people not have the stressors of dealing with an old phone bill or an old rental agreement, a lease agreement that went bad when they went to prison, or a child support issue that was made much more difficult when they went to prison, those types of things. Any civil legal issue, it doesn't take care of any criminal fine issues or anything like that, but the civil legal issues can be just as difficult to deal with, and sometimes tend to be more so, in that they're very convoluted and many people do need lawyers to manage all of those things. So our hope is that it, in the long run, affects the issue of recidivism.
Thank you, Representative Sanchez. I know that you've historically taken a special interest in Coffee Creek, and I just want to thank you for your interest in supporting these people incarcerated. I would also like to ask, in a similar measure, there was a resolution I think was brought pretty early in the session to give people in all Oregon state institutions the right to vote, attempting to give felons the right to vote, and but that didn't seem to go too far. Can you talk a little bit about that? I know that that's something that you were probably supportive of, but I was wondering what happened to that.
I was supportive of that bill. I think that certainly it makes a difference for people to be engaged in their communities in some way, shape, or form, and it helps people remain connected to their community, and I think that, so it's really important. But I clearly that was an issue that some folks could not manage and couldn't wrap their heads around. They truly, sadly, some of the information that we heard from folks was, well, folks, they went to prison, you know, they've given up their rights to be a citizen of this state, and they will regain those rights once they exit the prison system, which to a degree is valid, but it's also, it also, again, is that part of disconnecting people from the right to sort of manage their lives. Once people exit the prison systems, they're going to be living in our communities, and the laws that are made, the people that are elected, the measures that are passed in this state do affect them. And they really should have some access to be able to support or not support them.
Thank you. Do you have any idea why the bill got stalled out, and what some of the future plans for the bill might be?
You know, I don't know of future plans necessarily. I would imagine that it will be brought back up again. I'm not in rules, so I don't know exactly what happened, but I can imagine, again, that there were some serious objections to moving it forward, sadly. Rules tends to be a place where, contrary to popular belief, we actually make some last ditch efforts to move things versus allowing them to die there. But it had to have been a significant struggle to move it forward.
Thank you, Karen.
And Representative Sanchez, now this is the second year Oregon Justice Resource Center brought forth this bill to the Oregon legislature, and it failed, the voting rights in prison. So how much I've been hearing Republicans calling these bills for criminal legal reform and police reform pro-criminal or soft on crime, and how much of that rhetoric played into the failure of some of this important legislation?
You know, I think that may have been obviously a pretty significant part. And I will tell you that one of my biggest concerns is obviously messaging and how we say what's real and what's not. It is always stunning to me that people can look at an issue from a completely different perspective and see it as, soft on crime. I don't see it as soft on crime. Someone's already been convicted. They're already in prison. They're going to do their time. What matters is that they have a level of engagement in their communities. You know, maybe looking at some of the other bills that were passed, there's, again, more assumption that it's soft on crime. What I think it's 1510 is another bill that was moved this year is trying to say is that sometimes we have some inequities. We have some significant inequities in our judicial system and how people go to prison and who goes to prison and why. Those are huge issues. And we're not willing oftentimes to look at some of those issues and make that, you know, real concrete sort of like, okay, this is how it's been in the past. We need to figure out how to fix it. And so sometimes the fix is a lot harder for people to manage.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of Senate Bill 1510, we'll get to that omnibus bill that did pass the legislation. But I'd like to talk about Oregon Justice Resource Center. Now, they had a few other bills on, and the voting rights was one of their bills, and it did fail. But the other bill that they had brought forth this year was Senate Bill 1568, the compassionate release of eligible adults in custody under extraordinary circumstances, releasing prisoners for medical reasons. And that did fail. Can you talk about that legislation and the reasons that failed this year?
You know, again, I have to say this year, of course, I moved into the co-chair seat of Ways and Means. And so I didn't have as much opportunity to engage on the level that I would have liked to. But I will tell you again, more of those messages of soft on crime and requiring people to fulfill a long-term sentence, whether they're ill or not, was that tough on crime supposedly standpoint. And it is amazingly sad that in this moment in time where we can see that people are struggling in particular in the time of COVID, when there's an overwhelming population of folks in prison, why we would not do our very best to release folks who are literally not going to be harmful to community or anyone, probably not even themselves to some degree, because they're struggling to survive, literally. That's amazing to me that we can't see that piece as a compassionate reason for releasing someone. We know that we have a significantly aging population in our prison systems, and it's a very difficult process right now. It's quite stunning that somehow or another that was perceived as being soft on crime.
Mm-hmm. And another Oregon Justice Resource Center bill was Senate Bill 1584, and that was the Oregon Justice for Exonerees Act, and that would compensate those wrongfully convicted of a crime. And that one did pass. And I know Oregon Justice Resource Center did a lot of work since last year to gain support for that legislation. Can you talk about that act?
That one was actually quite amazing. People presume there would be a big fiscal on that. The fiscal is somewhat indeterminate. We almost don't believe it will be actually very big, which I don't know that played a role one way or the other in its passage. I think what was more significant in its passage is the realization that there would be all of this work done to assure that, in fact, someone did not commit that crime. and therefore we, you know, as a state, as a society, should really recognize that we have a responsibility to in some way, shape, or form, you know, pay for, if that's what it ends up being, the fact that we put somebody in prison when we shouldn't have, that our system didn't work in some way, shape, or form, and that we owe this person things that they will never get back. They will never get back the time they spent in prison. But if that monetarily means something, then yes, we owe that.
And now you did mention Senate Bill 1510, and that was the Transforming Justice Bill. That was a huge bill, a huge win this year, again, brought back from last year. And this was brought forth by a whole coalition of organizations here in Oregon, including Red Lodge Transition Services, that I know is an organization near and dear to your heart, which helps Native Americans coming out of prison, coming out of jail, especially women, and helping them on their recovery, in their recovery. So talk about that bill, and especially the provisions of the bill, what passage of that bill means, especially for people of color.
Well, I'm sure if you listened at all to the floor speeches that were on there, you might have heard Representative Nelson, who is the first African-American male LGBTQ, you know, to serve in the House of Representatives. And he talked about having been stopped upwards of 40 plus times in his lifetime, and never once in that time having been actually arrested for anything. All of that time, I mean, so many times to be stopped. And I myself, as a Native American, have been stopped many times, and you know, certainly not anywhere near as many times as he has. But I will tell you, all but one time of the many, many times I've been stopped, the very first question that an officer asked me was not, can I see your registration and driver's license, or do you know why I stopped you? The very first question that is asked of me is, have you been drinking today?
Wow.
And that would, seriously, that is a level of implicit bias that you cannot just move past at all. And so we have to really recognize that communities of color are stopped at a much higher rate. They're stopped for very biased reasons and assumptions that are made about our character without knowing anything about us. That is the true reality of the situation. And so knowing that, and I know personally many, many people who live in fear of being stopped. They don't know if they're going to make it, right? They're traumatized by the whole experience in and of itself. And then when a cop asks them, can I search your car? They're just frozen. Mm-hmm. They don't know what to say. I mean, I've literally seen it, you know, in a car that I was driving when I was stopped and they asked me if I'd been drinking. The passengers that I had in my car were just frozen. They were so frightened because they assumed that something would happen. They would go to jail, they would get hurt in some way, shape, or form. And that really speaks to how we have to identify the fact that communities of color live in fear of that interaction. And being stopped for something so minor as a taillight out is just not a reason to put people through that type of thing. It's just not enough reason. So I think this bill was so very, very important to create that, first of all, that for me, that identification that that people have a right not to say no, you can't search my car. There's no reason for you to search my car. And to not feel intimidated in a way that would make them think that, great, now they're gonna show up with the dogs and search my car.
You're listening to Prison Pipeline here on KVOO Portland. I want to remind you that this is a great time to become a member of KBOO. Show your support for Prison Pipeline and for KBOO by becoming a member of KBOO today. Just go to kboo.fm/give. Help us meet our $15,000 goal. We're community funded and we need your support to get there. So just go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44-321.
And how important is the BIPOC caucus in the Oregon legislature, and how significant I can imagine that you just bring that different perspective to all the people in the legislature and an understanding of these types of legislation. So how impactful is that?
You know, it is amazing to me. You know, as I'm sure you might recall, I'm only the second Native American to ever serve in the Oregon legislature. We, you know, over the years, there have been numbers of peoples of color who've come into the legislatures in ones and twos. In 2017, when I was elected, five of us came in at the same time. And then one more, and one more, and one more over the last several years. You know, this past year in the House and the Senate, there were like 12, 13 of us. It was amazing. And for the first time in Oregon history, we might actually have a legislature that starts to look, because nowhere near there yet, starts to look like the full demographics of the state of Oregon. Mm-hmm. Now, how amazing is that? And the fact that those folks pull together and have like views and like understandings of the same types of disparities throughout the state and the country, for that matter, they have some of the same understandings of inequities, of bias, of racism and oppression, of all of those same types of things. Having that powerful message come through and say, we support this bill or this bill, and even bills that we didn't bring forth ourselves, we support them because they're important and they will make a difference in how we see communities of color going forward. I think that is such an amazing thing, and it became a very powerful thing, and hopefully will remain so. We certainly have a few people leaving this year and people moving towards the Senate if they can make that happen this coming year. So we're going to lose a chunk of people. Hopefully we will gain a chunk of people in this next session of voting that's going on in November. We'll move forward and see what we can do to continue to try to change the color of the legislature.
Representative Sanchez, of all the legislation that was passed in this session regarding criminal justice reform, what were you most proud of?
Well, to be honest, I honestly was most proud of 4050, just because what I want to make sure always happens is that if people end up going to prison for whatever that is, that they can get out and stay out, that we can do whatever we can to support them to live their life in the best possible way. And if we can mitigate some of the barriers that become, you know, huge when you get out of prison, then that will help people move forward in the best possible way. We know that some 90-something percent of the folks in our prison system at this moment in time will get out one day. And if they get out one day, and they don't have a place to live, and they can't get a job, and they can't get health care, and all of the things that we all need and want in our lives, then we're continually holding them accountable for something they did a long, long time ago, and that's not okay. We have to be able to help people to live their lives in the best possible way, and mitigating some of those civil legal issues that end up coming up, you know, when people go to prison, I think is one of the most powerful things that we can do.
Is there anything, Representative, that we haven't talked about today that you want to make sure to address so people have a chance to hear about it?
Oh, goodness. Well, you know, I don't know what's coming forward in the next long session, but I will tell you anything that didn't get moved or was a struggle in this last session will likely come back, which I think is very, very important. I think anytime we move things and they don't pass, people get a little discouraged about that. I will tell you, though, that the long session is where these really tough fights should be fought. The short session is technically a cleanup session. It's what's supposed to fix the things that we didn't get fixed before. So the long session is the time that we really need to push forward and try to move some of these bigger items. I would encourage people, if they really have an interest in this work and being those advocates, take a look at the timelines that are there. Earlier in the game is better. Doing that advocacy work up front prior to the legislative session starting is really what's going to be important. And if it's not you know, we shouldn't be focusing necessarily just on those folks that we know are on our side. Focus on talking to the folks that are struggling with the decision.
Representative Sanchez, I did want to ask you about a bill that your committee, the House Interim Committee on Behavioral Health, brought forth or introduced in the Senate, and that was House Bill 4004. While it's not criminal legal reform, it is helping fund our behavioral health workforce. And it's going to be immediate funding in May, and with so many people with addiction and mental health issues in our jails and prisons here in Oregon, I think this is a very significant topic. And thank you for bringing this forth. Do you want to? And that did pass the legislature. Can you mention that?
Certainly.
4004.
Yes, House Bill 4004 was. And actually an attempt. Well, let me just back up and say, unfortunately, I am no longer the chair of House Behavioral Health. I'm the co-chair of Ways and Means now, which is a huge job, and I can't do both, sadly. So Representative Knows, we had worked on this bill prior to the session starting, and what it was doing, and now will do, in fact, was to try to resource a little bit more, bring up wages, bring up rates for folks who are working in behavioral health settings. What we know is that a lot of folks working in that field were some of the lowest paid workers and some of the most stressed at this moment in time. Living through the pandemic has not been easy on anyone by any stretch of the imagination, but those folks who were dealing with people who are struggling, it was even much more difficult for them. And it was much more difficult for them because, again, they were not being paid well. They were being overworked. The systems were overwhelmed as it was. And we felt like there was a need to actually to resource them better and also pass other bills like the governor's Future Ready Oregon bill, which I don't remember the number off the top of my head. But that bill actually was, again, more work towards like how do we build the workforce around mental health, around health in general, social services. We have to figure out how we bring more people into this work, educate them well, train them well, and get them into the field so that we can deal with just an overwhelming amount of work that needs to be done in this area. We still tend to be the lowest on the list, sadly, for access to behavioral health systems, and that includes addictions, of course, where, you know, we're number one, sadly, right there at the top for addictions. Well, let me just also say, Measure 110, while that is actually moving some funds in the right directions, it is moving as fast as it can logistically move. And standing up new programs to do this work isn't easy. People may think that, oh, I'll just throw money at it. That doesn't help if you don't have a system in place. And Oregon has not had a decent system for addictions and mental health significantly in a very, very long time. And so putting some money into that, putting some money into health workers and mental health workers is really, really important. We have to really support people to do their job and do it and feel like they can survive at the same time.
Representative Tana Sanchez, thank you so much for your time and the legislative wrap-up. We hope to see
you
next session. You have been listening to Prison Pipeline, produced at the studios of KBOO Portland. I'm Karen James. I'm here with co-host Emma Lugo. Listen to this and previous Prison Pipeline programs at kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. Like Prison Pipeline on Facebook. Thank you to our engineers, and thank you for listening.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intent intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
Before we go, I just wanted to remind you that this is a great time to become a member of KBOO. Show your support for Prison Pipeline by becoming a member of KBOO today. Remember, 80% of our funding comes from our members, and less than 10% of our listeners are members of KBOO. We're an independent, community-supported, volunteer power radio, and our programming focuses on unique issues that you may not hear in the corporate media. So if you can, please help us meet our goal of $15,000. We're community-funded, and we need your support to get there. Just go to kboo.fm/give or text to KBOO to 44321. Thanks so much and have a great evening.
Seven FM, K282BH, Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR, Hood River on 91.9 FM.
KBOO radio station is located in Portland, Oregon, in Multnomah County.